Tillerson deserved credit for accomplishments not visible on ExxonMobil's balance sheet. His Hamlet-like performance on carbon taxation and climate change did him little credit, but he had led a determined drive to reduce the greenhouse gases emitted by the corporation's own operations, and this had produced real improvements. On his watch, ExxonMobil had reduced gas flaring, the wasteful burning of natural gas produced during oil extraction, which contributed to global warming, by more than half. In Nigeria and other countries with weak governments, the corporation had missed announced targets for the elimination of flaring altogether. It blamed the failure of its partner regimes. Still, between the progress it did make and greater energy efficiency, ExxonMobil had reduced its total direct greenhouse gas emissions by 11 million metric tons, a significant achievement. Tillerson had also taken steps to address ExxonMobil's fudging about whether the corporation was finding enough oil and gas each year to replace the amount it pumped and sold. Under Raymond, and again during Tillerson's first years, ExxonMobil had declared publicly through press releases and at Wall Street analyst presentations that it had found enough new proved reserves of oil and gas to replace each year's production and sales. But in making this claim, the corporation ignored the accounting methods required by the Securities and Exchange Commission. In some years, ignoring the SEC reporting rules allowed the corporation to sidestep embarrassment. In 2008, using SEC rules, and based on the corporation's limited public disclosures, ExxonMobil's reserve replacement would have been below 75%, an alarming rate. But instead of accounting forthrightly for this failure, the corporation issued a press release that quoted Tillerson boasting, "ExxonMobil has replaced an average of 110% of production over the last 10 years." That was a defensible claim only if one preferred ExxonMobil's self-regulation to federal rules. On December 31, 2008, the outgoing Republican-led Securities and Exchange Commission revised its reserve reporting rules to allow the counting of oil sands, shale gas, and other previously banned categories of reserves. The commission also changed other reporting rules that Raymond and Tillerson had found objectionable. Whatever the merits of these changes, and they did bring SEC rules closer into alignment with extensive oil industry investment in the sands, they liberated ExxonMobil from spinning. The corporation ceased double counting. From now on, it would report only numbers authorized by the SEC. It did not retract its previous claims to Wall Street and the public, however, noting only that its long reserve replacement streak was based on some years when the SEC rules were not used as the basis for the calculation. The cleaner 2010 reserve replacement numbers looked good on the surface, but were concerning underneath. When the XTO gas properties were incorporated into ExxonMobil's resource base, the corporation reported that it had replaced an extraordinarily strong 209% of the oil and gas it produced that year. Yet XTO's purchased properties accounted for 4/5 of the corporation's new reserves. Without XTO, according to Barclays, ExxonMobil would have replaced only 45% of its 2010 oil and gas production, a performance so abysmal that if it continued for a prolonged period, ExxonMobil would be on a path to liquidation. By comparison, Conoco's organic or internally generated reserve replacement rate in 2010 was 138%. Shell's was 133%. Of course, ExxonMobil had always been better at buying other people's oil than at finding it. Arguably, from a shareholder's perspective, it made no difference whether the oil and gas Exxon pumped and sold so profitably each year had been discovered because of geological genius or bought with piles of cash generated by financial and operating acumen. If Tillerson could maintain the financial performance that made the XTO acquisition possible, he might continue to buy what he could not find. But at a minimum, the numbers made clear how important the XTO purchase would be to Tillerson's legacy on Wall Street and in the oil industry. If the deal underperformed, the corporation would be hard-pressed to maintain its superiority. Tillerson promised when he took charge to increase ExxonMobil's annual production of oil and gas to 5 million barrels per day by 2009. The actual number was 3.9 million, more than 20% short. Tillerson promised again that ExxonMobil's production would grow steadily until 2014, but the trailing numbers showed the corporation in a long, flat pattern, Its annual production in 2001, after the Mobil merger closed, was 4.3 million barrels per day. Tillerson had not cracked the challenge of reserve replacement that had also daunted Raymond. Before Tillerson, dissent and hard feeling inside ExxonMobil often traced to Lee Raymond's blunt manner. Under Tillerson, ExxonMobil might be a kinder, gentler place to work, yet some of the old guard feared a loss of the toughness and discipline they had valued in Raymond. Retired executives of the Raymond era took one another out to dinner in Houston, Dallas, and elsewhere, and talked about whether Tillerson had enough of the guts and firmness that Raymond had mustered to drive ExxonMobil's financial performance. Tillerson's remark to Wall Street analysts increasingly made it clear that he was aware of these dissenters. It required the equivalent of Kremlinology to perceive Tillerson's public replies to these dissenting factions, but his rejoinders were detectable. At analyst meetings, Tillerson started to use 2006, the year he took the top job, as the basis for reporting about, and boasting about, ExxonMobil's financial performance. He ignored the Raymond years, and he went so far as to explain how his leadership had extracted profitability from one tough project, the Kearl oil sands play in Canada, because he had made flexible analytical judgments about projected rates of return that would not have been taken 5, 6, 8 years ago when Raymond was in charge.